I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps, a book club podcast.
On the 42nd anniversary.
Yeah. It is really convenient that it happens to be the 42nd anniversary by year. I think we found out that that the book originally published like in September or something like that.
Yeah, like
so not
yeah,
on not day year. And date, but we're close enough. Yeah. 42 years. I think once you get to the point where you know you're several decades in, people don't really count like months and days for anniversaries. Yeah. So it's like this is our 42nd year.
Double digits. It was in the category for you know not 86 books or whatever. 1980. Wait, when was it? When did it come out? I can't do math.
79.
Yeah, so 79. Like it was in the category for that year, you know, so it just gets to track with them.
79. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think, man?
I mean, it was good.
Yeah.
It was funny. Yeah. It was just fun and quick, you know, it's a little bit of nothing, which is fine.
It didn't change really the way you think about life and the universe and everything.
No. There's not really anything that happens. It's very clearly the first part of a series of what I imagine is going to end up just being individual adventures. I doubt that there's any like, I mean, you know, if, have you read the whole series, the whole five part series or whatever?
I think I've gotten to the second or third one. I can't remember. I think I stopped because like the fourth one was all about Zaphod and I don't dislike Zaphod Beeblebrox, but I was just like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, it was getting so weird. Like,
I imagine that there's not really any real overarching story, though. Like, I would bet that it's mostly just individual adventures, and maybe there is a through line that just keeps the people together or whatever, but...
No, it's more... Yeah, that's more what it is. It's just, like, the people we know are going on the adventure, and, I mean, it just... They're all references to, like, stuff they talk about in the first one. Like, the restaurant at the end of the universe. I think that's the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they go to.
Because that's how this one ends, at the very least. Yeah. Is he's like, "Hey, are you hungry? Okay, we'll stop at the restaurant at the end of the universe." So
yeah,
so that just picks up where it left off.
And then I think the next one is "So Long and Thanks for All the Fish." So I think that one's like a super introspective one. I feel like it was probably a big metaphor because I think Arthur was like separated from everyone for a long time, and he met these aliens on this like deserted wasteland planet that was like it was just weird, but. And then I think he runs into Ford, and then it's like the end. And then I don't think I've kept reading at that point. It was just too, I was just like, I'm not even paying attention. It's just so weird. I should give it another shot though.
Yeah. I think that at some point I'll read through the rest of them.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. If they're all as quick and, you know, just a good time, then sure.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's probably a reason this one is like the only one you hear about. You don't hear about it as like the Hitchhiker's Guide series.
Well, there's also, I mean, at some point, the Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide came out. And that's just all five of them put into one, you know, just bound into one book. And in fact, I had posted an excerpt from the book earlier on my Instagram. And Reed responded and he was like, "Oh, that's such a great book. Have you read The Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide?" And I was like, "What is that? Let me look it up." And I was like, "Oh, it's just all five of them. He's making it seem like it was like, you know, like a redux or something like that.
Version,
and I was like, "Oh, is this like something else?" Like, "Oh, no, it's just, I don't have to buy all five. I can just buy one, but I already bought one. So I'm going to buy the other four, I guess."
Yeah. I got my brother the Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
It was cool. It had like,
I wonder how long ago that was published though, because potentially if that was published like a long time ago, maybe that is the experience that most people have and they just don't realize that it's all five of them, you know. And so that's why everybody references Hitchhiker's Guide, because,
well, didn't you say it came out originally as like short stories on the radio?
Yes.
So that, I mean, it makes sense that it could have just been sold as like different books of the book, like this is That makes sense. Like how Lord of the Rings, each one had two books in it. Like this is just like he meant to be the Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but with each book, because they're all references to stuff we hear about early. So it makes sense that I feel like it was published probably individually.
I would imagine so. I would bet that money grab. Yeah, I would bet that Arthur Douglas, you know, had the, or was Arthur Douglas Adams. Arthur's our main character, Arthur Dent. Arthur Dent, Douglas Adams.
Yeah. Douglas Adams goes on to do quite a bit of like voiceover work, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I feel like he was a pretty popular name, at least in like UK culture, sort mm-hmm. of thing. Because I always feel like I got him confused with the other narrator of the BBC stuff, David Attenborough.
Oh, David Attenborough.
Yeah. Him and.
He's a national treasure of voice acting. Well, not voice acting, but narration. I guess that literally is voice acting, but. Yes, yeah. They're categorized differently, though, right? Like, narration's a little bit different than voice acting in theory.
Yeah.
But it is literally just using your voice.
Yeah, but, and, yeah. I wonder, and it's...
Or using your vocal cords, maybe a more accurate way to say that.
Yeah, I would love to do voiceovers for, like, a nature show or something.
Yeah?
I mean, it would be fun. I feel like paid a lot.
I wouldn't have the right voice for that.
Oh, I don't have the right voice.
Because I just think about voice. Like a David Attenborough or...
Well, just like have you be chill. And
or like
say
Carl
something.
Sagan. Like I just think about the people who are legends at having done, you know, science and nature documentary voiceovers. And I'm like, my voice isn't anything like that.
Yeah, that's okay. That's the new voice. This is the new voice. You say something about the Hitchhiker's Guide. I'll chill though. Yeah.
I don't know. On like the spot.
What's on the cover?
What's on the cover? The cover is just like a blob, isn't it?
It says, "Don't panic."
That's oh, that's right. Yeah, like, on the cover, the actual Hitchhiker's Guide. I was thinking about of the R version of it, the real life version.
The one that I had, I think, had a picture of Martin on it with like, it did say "Don't panic" on there though. That's like a big joke. Yeah. And actually, funny,
it's a pretty good joke.
Funny story. My college professor at A&M, he wrote a physics book. And the title was "Don't Panic, It's Just Physics," you know, but it was "Don't Panic." And then in subtext, it was like, it's only, you know, physics. Right. And Douglas Adams actually filed like a lawsuit because he thought he had like taken the name. And it turned out that my physics professor had had the name "Don't Panic" longer than him. And he was just like, oh, shit. Okay, my bad.
That's funny. Yeah, the 42nd edition of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy features a picture of what appears to be Martin handing off a cup of tea to a green tentacle.
Did it sense the tentacle's taste buds like it did for Arthur, or is it just going with Arthur's version of what's good tea?
I don't know. It doesn't say any of that. It's just a picture.
Can you even imagine how good that drink machine is? Like, it just senses your tongue based on like what you want that at that moment.
Well, doesn't it then immediately go on to say that everybody complains about it because what it spits out tastes nothing like tea, or like it is as far away from tasting like tea as it possibly can?
That's not the way I understood. I thought it was like not almost unlike tea. Isn't that what they said?
Unlike tea. Yeah. So,
it was not almost unlike tea.
I don't know. I'd have to look at the phrasing again.
I always thought.
But then the next sentence, it goes on to talk about how the complaint department. Or complaint department for that company takes up most of an entire planet, and because everybody complains to them about their products or
was
whatever.
Was the joke that it only made one flavor and it was all the same?
Maybe so. The way that I took it was that like it, you know, it for some reason takes all because then it also like in that long description and the way that everything gets described really, you know, lengthily in this book. It whenever it's talking about all the stuff that it does, it then says, but nobody knows why it does that because what it spits out ends up just tasting, you know, not unlike tea or something like that, you know? And so, the way that I kind of thought that what that was saying was that, you know, presumptively it spends more attention on figuring out what you need dietarily and it says specifically what will go down easily, I think, or smoothly, something to that effect, not necessarily what it is that you want to drink, just like, is this a person that will retch if we give them something really bitter or what, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds good to me though, still. Just not
it's
hot.
Definitely a very efficient way to drink something and it be healthy for you.
Oh yeah, dude.
As opposed to like thinking, oh, okay, well, what time is it? Oh, it's too late. I can't have caffeine right now or something like that. Yeah. You know, the real world problems that we live with in the first world.
Yeah, dude, I'll bring my Yeti over there. I'll be like, I need a full thing of the most hydrating fluid. I'll just chug it.
That'd it just
awesome.
Spits out water.
No, dude, it would do super water with electrolytes. Of
right.
Course.
Ah, there you go. Of course, electrolytes. I forget about those. And how important they are.
Dude, did you think they were? Obviously, you didn't think they were going to die. But how did you ever think like, When are they going to, like, this is the weirdest situation. Of course, they're not dying, but, like, how are they going to get out?
Well, no, because they had a, what was it, a limitless or infinite improbability machine or whatever.
I'm thinking, I guess, specifically just to one point when they get thrown out into the vacuum of space when they're on the first ship after they leave Earth. I forgot.
When they catch a ride with the Vogons or Vogons, whatever they're called. Exactly, the people who destroy Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, in that moment, I was like, I mean, something has to happen, but I can't fathom what it's going to be at this moment.
Yeah.
And then the literally least fathomable possible thing does happen, and that a spaceship that has an infinitely improbable, you know, drive infinite or whatever. Infinite
improbability drive, you can
say.
Yeah,
there you go. The infinitely improbability drive. I couldn't remember exactly what it was called. It shows up, you know, something that, you know, by all, like, practical, you know, physics as I understand them, can't exist or whatever.
Well, it took them a long time. They just made it. It's brand new. That's Nobody's true. Ever seen this before.
Yeah. Some fucking, like,
but it's also not
Goodwill Hunting person came up with a solution or whatever, right?
Like, dude, it's not also completely improbable, too, because, like, they have to put in some type of, like, they calculate how improbable something is, and then they type that into the thing, and by some luck and chance of coincidence, like, you're supposed to go that distance, you know, but, like, instantly. And I feel, and around that time, too, they were saying, like, everyone's, almost everything's life in the universe was governed by phone numbers, which is kind of the relation to, like, probably why they pulled, because Trillion was on there, so they had, like, an Earth, you know, and they pulled from the machine. I feel like there's just, the machine is going to continue to provide coincidences.
Yeah.
They still have it, right? That's their strip?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's what I thought. Marvin.
There is that one moment that Arthur just punches it, though, whenever they're getting chased by the missiles outside of Megarathea, the planet. And it just works out for them.
How did you say the president of the the galaxy's name?
The current one that steals the Heart of Gold?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look at it.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
I think I said Zaphod.
Nice.
Just because I was already, like, in, you know, British mode by the time that his character gets introduced. So I just imagined that it would be pronounced Zaphod.
And then Slarty Bark Fast.
Beeblebrox. how did I start a Barker Fast or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Slarty Bark Fast.
I didn't say it like that.
That's how
I gave it a little. What's the word that I'm looking for? I gave it a little more nuance.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not gonna, like, yeah, with those names, like the joke names.
Tolkien has ruined me for names because I am just, like, inherently want to make names more complicated now. That's how my life has been ever since I first read Lord of the Rings. I was like, oh, names are complicated. They should be complicated. Instead of just like, this dude's name is Dan, I'd be like, no, it's a Don.
And people are always saying, like, not the name you go by in roll call. They're like, William.
Right.
Can you change? Are you going to change your name legally to Will?
I don't see why I would. If I was going to spend the effort to change my name, I would just change it.
Oh, what would you change it?
I have no idea. Laser or something.
Laser. Phantom Laser.
It's something that I have thought of. The more time I spend away from, you know, back home, the more I think about just dropping every single last vestige of back home. And I've been, you know, trying to, like, get a new, like, a 512 phone number for forever at this point. Because I just don't want any more connection to Corpus Christi, if I can help it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, my parents are going to probably live there for forever. And, you know, obviously, I'm going to stay connected with them. But everything else that I could possibly disconnect from that just fucking awful blight on this planet, I would love to do so. And if part of that can be my literal identity, then I could, you know, I consider it.
Nice. Okay.
I don't know what I would change it to, though. Phantom Laser Menace. Just mostly named after, like, what I think.
Star Wars.
I think that the Phantom Menace is the funnest of the prequels. And to get off track here for a second, it's not good. None of them are any good. People say that Revenge of the Sith, the third one, is the best of the three from, like, a, you know, objective standpoint. Mm-hmm. But Phantom Menace is fun, I think. I think Phantom Menace is super fun. I think the pod race is a lot of fun. I think some of the starship battles are really fun. I think that this, whenever Darth Maul shows up at the end to fight Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, whenever mm-hmm. they're, you know, taking Naboo back, and he disrobes and Duel of the Fates starts playing. From that point on to, you know, the culmination of that fight is some of the best sequence. I think it's like a top three sequence of the entire franchise. I think it's so fucking good. The fight choreography in the prequels is spectacular.
Yeah.
If nothing else, the prequels has really good fight choreography.
Oh, yeah. It had really cool, like, cinematics. I thought just... Oh, yeah. That's all I was thinking about. Anakin and Obi-Wan fighting. And then, of course... But, dude, you brought up a bunch of scenes from The Phantom Menace that I forgot. All I remember is pod racing. And I was just like, ugh, I hated... The pod racing game, the Star Wars episode.
It's very, very, very difficult. Kenneth and I tried to play it again when we lived in Boston because mm-hmm. I brought my 64 with me and I have it still. The pod racing game. I used to be kind of good at that game. I remember getting to like the last level and, you know, going through and beating it a couple times, but you had to beat it with like every character to really beat the game. We couldn't get past the first fucking level.
Really?
Those things fly at 5 million miles per hour.
It makes no sense, the controls. Dude, that's it's how impossible. I felt all the time, and I would always only ever play it at James's house, and he would just always destroy me.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fun.
Kenneth and I played it all the time when we were kids, and I used to be able to get through the game, but this, you know, like I said, this last time that we turned it on back in, you know, at this point, 2014, 2015, we were just immediately crashed into a fucking wall. We couldn't get anything done. It's just, I don't know how I was able to handle it back then. I mean, and I'm, you know, more than twice as old in reflexes and all that at this point, but
times have changed.
Still, like, I don't buy that as being enough of a reason because I'm still pretty good at some other video games. So I don't think reflexes are totally out the window.
It's probably just like the lack of instant connection with the controls and the game system. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because like, I don't play the 64 every day, and it's a dumb controller.
And it's really, I'm sure it's controller. Not as sensitive as any other controller that we're used to playing now.
Yeah,
but. Do you think that something was going on in this universe to go back to
back to the subject of the episode?
Do you think that, like, at that time they were just always getting bypasses put through like their houses and stuff? Like,
it seems like that.
Okay.
Because
it was like.
But do you mean like in England or in the space time?
Oh yeah, in the story, it seems like that's something
that's something that. Happens today. I mean, that's what eminent domain's all about, you know? Local government decides, hey, we need your land because we're going to expand the highway right here.
It just seems like such a weird concept.
The way that it plays out in the book is obviously ridiculous.
I mean, it happens to Arthur and then it happens to the world. Like,
yeah, that's the whole joke.
I was just like, did this recently happen to Douglas Adams? Like, was
he right? He was, it was on his mind.
He had to sell his house because it was about to get destroyed and he wasn't going to get the value for it. And so he wrote a book about about how he wanted to blow up the planet.
All the jokes in this book are so fucking good.
Oh, dude, I left the podcast last week, and I'm pretty sure I texted you instantly. Yeah. I was like, the jokes per minute in this book are ridiculous.
Right, and then that's what I texted back. I was like, oh, is Douglas Adams the Eminem of comedy writing?
Yeah, dude, he pretty much is. There are so many jokes that, like, honestly, like...
It's almost constant.
Yeah,
and like, you can't take the book seriously in any way. Like, you know, whenever it was... reaching the climax of its popularity during our, you know, young adulthood, probably because the movie had come out or was going to come out, so it was getting a lot of attention.
I think that
right?
was the rebirth of its popularity.
Yeah. Everybody was talking about it all the time, and they were all like, oh, this and that and blah, 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 and talking it up. And like I said last week, I was like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't care. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I get it. I still don't get, like, all that attention. And all I guess, hype. Like... the perspective of time is different because that was like 2012 or something, right? Or no, earlier than that. I'm stupid. It was like 2000.
I feel like for me, it was
like 2002 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
I added
what I was
10
thinking,
years on accident.
Because, I was going to say, I think I read it like 20 years ago.
So back then, the internet literally existed, but we weren't really doing much on it.
Yeah,
it's not like today where we can so quickly get distracted with new things. Mm-hmm. You know, Netflix didn't exist back then, or if it did, it was still just mail in DVD service. Yeah.
It was just so profound, too, because it was British. It was, like, my first exposure to British humor, and it was nonstop. And I was like, you know, and I think that happened to a lot of people, at least in, like, America, that were reading it younger. Like, that was when the movie came out in 02, 03. That was when we looked it up last week. When the movie came out, it, like, rebirthed the popularity. Like you said, you saw all the memes, and, like, you got a lot of the references from the cultural zeitgeist. But, like, I feel like that might have been a lot of people's exposure to actual British, hardcore British humor. Very well
could have been, yeah.
Because even if...
It's so British.
Even if everybody had read Harry Potter at that point, which I had, it's still... That's not like chock full of British humor. It does have it.
There's good humor in there, but it's... And good British humor in there, but it's a little more homogenized.
Yeah, it's a much more... Not obvious.
A wider audience will be able to appreciate more of it than...
It feels like it could happen to you, not like this is happening in another country. Yeah. You know,
like this is absolutely happening in Britain.
Oh, exactly.
Like, they don't even like have tea time in Harry Potter. Like, you know, yeah. Like, oh. Of the like biggest like stereotypes of English people, which is actually pretty fucking true, apparently. Like, they don't even have tea time in Harry Potter.
Yeah, the most I can think of is that Ron makes tea for people when they're upset.
Right, yeah.
And... Yeah, so like if that's your exposure to British humor and culture, that was kind of what it was for me. It was just like this mm-hmm. was so in your face, and I was like, okay,
yeah,
like,
it's a real explosion of it. I see why people are talking about
British British humor at mm-hmm. all. Like I see why it has its own label.
yeah, because so. It really is a totally different thing. Is you know so dry and also kind of just ludicrous at mm-hmm. times. And certainly with this book, like. Because Arthur Dent, our main character, is British, and then one of the people that he meets up with, Trillian, on the ship, she's also British, though she's not really much of a main character. She's just, you know, she's part of the ensemble cast at that point.
Eye candy. I'm kidding. No, she's like running the ship.
Right. But all the aliens that we meet are also very British.
Yeah, no, I was going
to... Which is kind of stupid, but again, this is not a serious science fiction adventure. It's just like a goofy fun time.
Yeah.
Well, so like whatever, but everything about this is super British, even though that they, you know, end up hundreds of light years away from England.
It's probably just the Babelfish translating it. It makes it British because that's yeah, I guess that's the
easy answer. Right. But like, I don't know that, but humor doesn't translate that way either.
Well, it seems like a bit of a stretch to say that
it's not only translating the words into something that you can understand, but then also translating the cadence, the prose, the humor.
This is his diary, okay? Arthur Dent is writing it.
The interaction between the policeman and Ford and Beelzebrox, like you know them talking. That's you know such a stupid British interaction. Mm-hmm. From like a comedy dialogue standpoint.
Well, dude, the time they use the infinite improbability drive, that in itself is ridiculous. But and like exactly the type of humor that I'd be, I don't know, it all fits. But like when they used it to escape the missiles at Terramithia, that's the movie.
Magarathea or something. Thank you.
That the whale and the flower pot.
Yeah.
Like that whole, it's like half a
chapter of what the whale was thinking.
Yeah. It was just like, it was so quick at naming stuff. It was the smartest whale in the world, in the universe at that time. Cause all the whales might've been dead. Well, the dolphins and stuff apparently left Earth.
Yeah. So conceivably, and there could maybe be whales elsewhere.
Yeah. The ranking on smartest animals on the planet was, mice, dolphins, humans.
Yeah.
Than dogs or something. What was their fourth? Did it go?
I don't remember there being a fourth listed.
Might not have. It might. I'm thinking the movie a lot too.
Oh yeah.
Because do you understand So Long and Thanks for All the Fish?
Well, it says that in the book that's what the dolphins say.
Yeah.
Before they abandon ship because they know that the end is coming.
I wonder why the third book is called that. I don't just to reference that
bit in the book.
They don't go visit the dolphins that left Earth. They're out there.
I don't know.
Swimming through the sky.
I'll have to find out, maybe.
in Star Trek Enterprise, there was an alien race, like at the Council of Aliens or whatever, when they met. They must have met on its ship, too, because it was a race that, like, had figured out interstellar travel, but it like, was fully aquatic. Like, it lived underwater and stuff. So they had, like, an underwater tank like attached to.
Oh, okay.
They were either attached and, like, they were just, like, opened up a screen door.
Like, fish bowls like Patrick and SpongeBob do when they go visit Sandy.
No, it was like it was straight up a whale, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember a random episode of Star Trek where they come across, they save a space whale, and then it meets up with another space whale, and then they like sing at the end, and it's like really pretty or whatever. What
does a space whale even look like in real life?
It's just a whale in space. I don't remember.
Yeah, I guess
the one in Star Trek like was kind of more like a being of light or something like that, if I remember correctly. Okay. It just was, the shape was reminiscent of a whale. And the song that the two space whales were singing at the end of it whenever they were reunited was, you know, reminiscent of Whale Song. It's like, woo, woo, woo.
Man, that's so pretty.
Space whales, I mean, anything super large and in space is a great concept, in my opinion. I love the giant space turtle that Earth is on in the Terry Pratchett series. I love that idea. I think that's super fucking cool looking. I like the idea of space whales.
That was like a classic Indian belief, actually. I learned that in college, that the Earth was kind of like, it was like swimming through the cosmos or whatever. Because they had, I don't really remember what they thought stars and stuff were. Maybe like representations of gods, because they would like use them to navigate.
Yeah,
everything is so weird. I don't know anything, and I feel like I know a lot of stuff too. You know, like anytime I try to tell anybody about stuff,
there's so much in the world to know.
Yeah,
that you can know, you know, by the numbers a lot of things, or you know, at least a little bit about a lot of different things.
Yeah,
but you still really don't know anything. Well, there's too much knowledge in the world available.
Well, I mean, with me specifically, like I've read this book a couple times, so I feel like my knowledge, like I'm pulling names, like I remember kind of a lot of what happened, but like if this had been the first time, it would be, I feel like I would I feel like I would have known everything that had happened, but it would have been so hard for me to recall it and tell you like everything. Like anytime I hear a new conspiracy that I really like, I'm always like, I think I understand the lines and connections they're making. But then when I try to tell somebody, it's like, just trust me, it made sense when I heard it the first time. You know, like I can't remember any of it. And it's frustrating. And I mean, I don't know how to fix that, but I guess just...
just repetition. Because it's all like you know, as dumb and nothing as this book is, because nothing happens in it really, it's extremely complicated just because it's using stupid nonsense words. Mm-hmm. A bunch of words thrown together in stupid nonsense ways, and you know, names of people that are just literal like garbledygook.
Yeah. Oh and, yeah. I wrote down a name that was
it's just
great.
Like impossible to really keep it in your head without having the repetition.
Yeah, I love when you were saying about just like space stories when they feel vast. You know.
Mm-hmm.
The Hitchhiker's Guide kind of makes it feel like that because it just always has so many answers for everything. And and I wrote down.
And yet they only ever talk about one mixed drink.
Yeah. I can't even remember the Gargle Blaster or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
I was just laughing really hard when I heard it. It was just that the Earth is right under the eccentric Columbus, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6. I was just like, I had to re-listen to it like 3 or 4 times so that I could write down the name. I don't even know if eccentric is what her first name is, but I'm pretty sure it's eccentric Columbus.
I think it read as eccentric. Like that's an eccentric billionaire.
Okay, then.
Like Elon Musk.
Is that how you spell eccentric?
Where is it?
It's the second paragraph, I think.
Your second note there.
Ha, 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 Earth.
Not that first in. Replace that first in with a C.
Okay. What is eccentric then? It didn't correct me like that wasn't a word.
No, maybe that is something else. But that's not, in the written, it was eccentric.
Well, eccentric Columbus, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6, had a lot more information about her just in her name than Earth did immediately after.
It was just harmless.
Do you think there's more under Milky Way galaxy? The Earth used to be there. We built a new superhighway.
Now we've got
a
bypass.
Oh, bypass.
Or whatever. Yeah, super intergalactic highway.
The new location of the best bypass.
Maybe. Because maybe there's something. That's another thing is like the planets revolve, right, around Sol. So the Earth is not always in the way of where this superhighway is going to be. So did they end up having to destroy other planets in the system?
Well,
it's kind of an oversight, I think.
There were a few more oversights the more I think about it, because honestly, it's a flat Earth theory to think that it would be in one spot, because that is like the case in flat Earth theory.
Yeah, because the sun revolves around it, right, in the flat Earth theory.
Yeah, and that's kind of why it explains, that's how it explains that like all the stars that we see are always the same, and how it seems like if we're flying through the galaxy at like this bullet through, like how we should be seeing different stars unless we're maybe revolving around something bigger. But I don't know. It is kind of, why don't we see different stars? How come they've been the same for like thousands and thousands of years? There aren't like different changing stars or new stars, and they don't move. Like they're just standing still. Like, I'm confused.
Well, it's it's primarily a distance thing, isn't it?
Does the sun move?
Well, so the galaxy moves. It's not, and individual stars do move to varying degrees, depending on like, is there, you know, a greater star nearby that has a gravitational pull that's going to pull it into it, or like a black hole or something of that nature.
We have stars in our galaxy.
Universe. I meant to say universe earlier. The universe at a whole, as a whole, is moving. If I remember correctly. Oh, because
the sun is a star.
Yes. But sun is a star.
The only star in our galaxy?
No, because the Milky Way galaxy is made up of like billions of stars or whatever.
On the edges. Oh, dude, we should look. Like, I don't know anything. It's been a while since space, I've
like
man.
Looked at like all the terminology. I'm getting the terminology, you know, out of order in my head. But the universe as a whole is like, or is the galaxy as a whole flying through the universe? The universe is just expanding, but yeah. We don't have a center point of the universe necessarily. And it expands like unevenly or something like that.
And we only ever have our stars from our galaxy. Like our galaxy just stays there and like spins. What's happening?
It's all crazy. That's what's happening.
Yeah, dude. And there was
because there's like dark space in between galaxies or something like that. Because the galaxies move, but they just move like, you know, as a piece, you know, more or less. And obviously that's not entirely true, but relatively speaking on the scale of a galaxy,
yeah,
it seems like a piece, you know, where like when you're driving your car, things might shake in your car a little bit, mm-hmm. but as a piece, everything's moving in the same direction at roughly 35 miles an hour or whatever, right? That's more or less kind of what it is at a small scale, I guess.
I mean, but I don't always see the same stuff.
See, but then also distance is a huge part because the stars that we're seeing have been dead like a long time. It just takes trillions of light years for them to get to us, for us to see it. So we're seeing a star the way that it was a trillion light years ago, or you know,
might not even be there.
So, well, actually, you know, light years is a distance, not a time.
Is there gonna be a day when they all go out? It's just gonna be darkness when darkness falls.
I suppose it's possible if there is just like, you know, like a super event where like a black hole, you know, somehow becomes large enough to just take in everything, but it would have to outrun the galaxy's or the universe's expansion, which is probably impossible.
What if it's a super mega black hole?
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, the babel fish,
it was, I would like love to have a babel fish.
Oh, dude, that's,
I would
the
put that in my
in
ear
world.
Immediately
instantly, dude. Yeah. Yeah,
I wouldn't even ask a fucking question about it.
Yeah, and it's it was like the argument for why God didn't exist. That was
that's a funny little bit. I liked that bit.
It was silly, but when I thought about it again, I was like, wouldn't something evolve to be more useful? Like if it eats brain waves or if it eats vocal waves and it like,
well, it was found in its current capacity. Like they found the species just on its own in space or whatever, with the ability that it currently has or whatever. And so it
being
at that
point.
Okay, so
they're saying it didn't evolve. It just was already like that.
Yeah, it already had
that
capability.
Preloaded. Yeah. Okay. Because they even said the word evolved, and I must have just misunderstood what they were saying. But I was like, of course it would evolve to do that, to be the, you know. But okay, so
it was successful on
now
its own.
I like it again, then.
Yeah. Because it's just a stupid logic puzzle that they're catching God in. Where, you know, like God's whole thing is like, you know, I have to have faith.
Yeah.
Like faith has to exist for me to exist. Mm-hmm. And so I can't just outright say, here I am. Otherwise, because, you know, that's not what faith is. Faith is, you know, believing without proof. And so by having created something this useful to everybody, that would, you know, useful without any, you know, necessary evolution to get to that point, that would be as good as me saying, here I am.
So
therefore
I don't exist.
And then he's like,
no faith,
he just like winks
knowledge.
Himself out of existence or something like that. Like he just pieces out. He's like, well,
oops,
guess y'all caught me in a logical puzzle. You're right. I'm out.
It's like when your computer crashes and it's just like in an infinite loop and you're just like, oh, fuck.
I love God's the like, fucking oh, go. The stupid gif of somebody just taking the My Computer icon and moving it into the recycled bin and then hitting empty recycled bin and the computer crashes. That's obviously not how that works. Away, but yeah.
That's so funny.
I fucking love that gif. I use that all the time at work.
That's probably how a lot of people think it does work, though, yeah. too.
It's sort of like, you know, what happens if you divide by mm-hmm. zero, you know, that sort of dumb joke.
What happens? You get an infinity?
The world explodes.
I can't remember what they said mathematically. Doesn't matter.
There was also an old dumb joke in, like, old World of Warcraft. There was a shield that you could get called the immovable object and a two-handed mace that you could get called the unstoppable force. And so mm-hmm. people would always link them in general chat and be like, what happens when an unstoppable force hits the immovable object? And then the next 30 minutes would just be people saying stupid shit. Because we didn't have lives back then. We just sat on WoW, even if we weren't doing anything. We were just talking in fucking general.
Figure this one out.
Fucking Baron's chat, just making fucking Chuck Norris jokes all day.
You think any like... awesome stuff has been discovered while people are playing WoW. They're just like talking about stuff and they're like, oh, no way. Like, what? And
like, someone has a paradigm shift because of fucking Baron's chat, probably. That's has to have happened at some point. It's been around
for so long that people, I'm sure, have just sat like in there as chat. 16
years or something like that. Yeah. Man, it's outrageous. I can't believe that. I haven't played it straight for 16 mm-hmm. years, but I've played on and off for 16 years, and that's kind of crazy. That's the longest relationship I've had with like
anything
ever, except for, I guess, like some friends.
Yeah, and dude. My first parents. Grade. First grade boys, please clue.
Right.
Okay, so the only other note I had was that I really appreciated Ford always listening to what Arthur was saying and like thinking about what he said. Like, even if.
Yeah, for being like a so like universally. Or, you know, I was trying to say worldly, but on a universal scale, but that doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, universally said.
For being like that kind of like a, you know, alien that's seen it all and kind of. Gets the perspective of I don't really care about Earth or humans or whatever. Mm-hmm. He really like takes the time for Arthur for whatever reason.
I liked that. It made it seem like, oh, that's why Ford was probably a good researcher, because he was like so open-minded that he didn't think, oh, I know the answer to this. And he like needed to be like told, or not even necessarily told, but like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. I like Ford as a character a lot.
Yeah, he's a good
guy. He's a good like sort of vehicle to keep everything moving, because this is a ridiculous story mm-hmm. and we don't need like good reasons to keep the story moving. Ford serves that purpose pretty perfectly in that situation.
Oh, I really liked Zaphod Beeblebrox's like erasing his memory from himself, but then leaving his own
that's
name.
That's such a complicated
like,
fucking like
it's
puzzle.
So funny. He's like, I wouldn't even trust myself. I know that I'm like a lying.
I wouldn't trust myself as far as I could spit a rat.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Right. There's a early on a joke that I really liked from it. This is like the only note that I took down, just because I thought it was like, oh, this is just such a great like kind of like example of like a British humor style joke. And it's when all the Vogon ships are arriving around Earth or whatever, mm-hmm. and it says the ships hung in the sky in much the same way that bricks don't.
Yeah, I remember that.
This is just a fucking stupid sentence, but it makes perfect sense. Like, oh yeah, you're right, bricks don't hang in the sky.
And it gives you a good image for just how like brutish and bulky and like what they are.
Just like a giant slab of yellow concrete or whatever.
Oh, it was funny that it was yellow too. Yeah. Like a construction vehicle.
The yellow is the universal color for like
for construction
warning shit.
Alert. Well, yellow is bright and alert. That's what I was gonna say. Read my mind, bro. Right. Get out of there.
Like a vest that construction workers wear, or you know, some more environmentally from like a nature standpoint, but environmentally aware, like bikers.
Did you look up that? Did you look up that human poet that was the worst one in the universe?
I did not. I assumed that had to be referencing something real, because it was just
like
a little too
specific.
It must have
been somebody he knew, or maybe right, he like hated it, like how we always reference that House on Mango Street's the worst ever. Right. Like, it must be something like that, you know? Yeah. Just like,
it was almost too specific.
Sandra Cisneros, like, worst author. You right. know? Just like, that's not true, but.
Yeah.
That book was rough.
She's a very celebrated author.
Would you rather read.
But I do not like that book.
Would you rather read the Lighthouse one again? No, what was the space book that we read?
Oh, Beacon 23?
Yeah, I was about to say Ladder 43, but that's not it. Okay, Beacon 23 or House on Mango Street again?
At this point, I think I would rather read House on Mango Street because it's been so long that, you know, maybe my perspective has changed and I could appreciate it even just a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll come back and be like, ugh, I remember right. why that was a slog.
Yeah, fucking shoes. Because Beacon 23 is more recent and like I still remember why I don't like that book.
Yeah, same.
I don't fully remember why I don't like House on Mango Street anymore. It's just so long ago, you know, it was 15, 16 years ago at this point.
We should look into some British authors. I wonder if there's anybody doing new stuff like in this vein, you know, just like silly, easy to read.
They most certainly are. We just have to find them.
Yeah. Like you were saying Terry Pratchett, is he British?
Yes, but he's been deceased for a while.
So he's not I'm coming out sure. with anything?
No, I don't think so.
In the near future?
Because okay. he's got the Discworld series, is that series that has the, yeah. you know, the Space Turtle.
And, oh, dude, I think that's like we've looked into it before. Yeah.
And that's like a whole like anthology series. There's like 50 books in that or something like that. But most of them are very short.
I think I've read a couple of them. Oh, yeah. They're cool. They're just weird. And I think they all kind of stand alone because it's mm-hmm. so big.
I think there's sections of them that form like sagas. But
like a good sitcom, you can hop in at any episode. But if you watch it from beginning to end, they tell a full story.
Yeah.
I was singing Seinfeld the before we started. We were doing the mic.
I do really like making stupid, just like funk bass lines because of that show.
Yeah, dude,
it's really funny to just sit there and I'll do it. I mean, I do a lot of stupid noises at work, but I do that a lot.
You don't ever listen to bass music, right? Or like cool bass lines. I don't even know how to look that up musically. Just like,
no.
What's a cool song with bass? Guitar.
It must exist.
Yeah, because whenever I hear it, I'm just like, man, that's cool. And then I like look up that song and
right.
Bass is cool.
I always think about whenever I did play bass regularly, how I tried so hard to learn how to play All Around the World by Red Hot Chili Peppers, and it was just too difficult for me.
You should have just been focusing on how to slap the bass.
Slap the bass,
slap
man.
The bass. I don't even think he says it like that. He says it way more normal.
I think they say it like
the way that we do it.
I think one part of that joke is that there's a point where they're just like saying it at each other back and forth in more and more ridiculous ways. The movie was so fucking funny. I fucking love that movie. Whenever we watched it that one time in college station, I was literally rolling on the fucking floor laughing. I could not believe that I was living out that acronym.
Ilium. I love you, man. you text that ILYM. Ilium. What else did you like about this book? What didn't
There's
you
a
like?
Dyson sphere in it. I love Dyson spheres. Whenever they land on Magrathea and what's his name? Fartmaster takes Arthur into like an office.
Is it Zaphod Beeblebrox? No, Slarty Bartfast.
Yeah. And they go through a portal into another dimension because the planet is too small to build planets on because they're a race of builders, and so they go to their workshop
where they keep them.
It's a Dyson sphere. A Dyson sphere is this idea where you build a structure around a star. That way you're able to harvest all of its energy.
Cool.
Whether it be for ecological reasons or to literally harvest energy like solar power or something like that. I think the Dyson spheres are something that I think are really fucking cool. There's a game
it's
that
hard
I've,
to even fathom the scope of that size of a project
because that's something that so you cool would undoubtedly it. Be able to see because like they describe it's a wall. it's something that you can see because it's solid and it's there, but it takes up your entire field of vision.
We get a new photo from the Hubble Space Telescope or space whatever, and it's like instead of another galaxy out there, it's just like a solid like metal sphere and covering the whole galaxy.
Right.
Like that's how big it has to be to put all the planets in it.
Yeah. There's a...
it would have to be that big or like as big as the sun because I think the sun can fit like...
Well, it has to be larger than the sun because you don't want to be too close to the sun because then whatever it is that you're wanting to harvest...
So it has to be the size of a galaxy pretty much probably.
At least as far out as the habitable zone. So, like, as far out as we are, we're the third planet, right? So
ideally, you just run into somebody really big and they could kind of catch a small one for you.
Right, yeah. It, and obviously, it does depend on the size of the star and the makeup of the star, because not every star is the same, like, you know, chemical makeup. And so the way that burns can be different in its output as well.
Is each one of those one of the marbles in Men in Black? Is the Dogon star the little marble that...
I think that those... I think that those marbles are entire galaxies, though.
Well, that's what I'd say you have to capture, because the galaxy surrounded... If, like, the sun's in the middle, which is the star, you'd need something.
Well, that would just be a star system, not a galaxy. A galaxy is several billion star systems.
Oh, you only need one star, huh?
Yeah.
Oh. Sun didn't need to be that big.
Yeah, it would just need to be as far out as the habitable zone of that star. So, like, as far out as Earth.
Yeah, we don't need to get the sun. That's, like, one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, it is a relatively large one on the grand scale,
I believe. Because there are stars orbiting it. We could just take one of those.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? Is our galaxy orbiting it? We don't need to get back into the space that we don't know.
Yeah, stuff that we know next to nothing about. I have a very passing knowledge of how space works, and I have forgotten most of it.
I have probably more flat Earth knowledge now than space knowledge. I need to start reading about space again.
Right, yeah, you need to counter some of that a little bit.
No, you're right. It's,
you're getting a little too weighted on one side.
Yeah, because whenever I do my test, I'm going to realize there is curve. And I'm going to be like, all right, well, throw it all out. Like, and right. then dude,
yeah,
we'll
start over.
I'm only sad for that, though, because when I do find that out, it's going to be any of the conspiracies that are that mind-bogglingly massive are going to just have to go out of the water for me, which I don't like, because I like the big ones. The big ones are so much fun.
They're fun. Conspiracies are great because they're fun.
Like, I'm hoping I find the conspiracy. That they're just fun. Well, I'm hoping that I find the conspiracy about the bypass to Earth.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I find out before you. I mean, I won't be able to do anything. It's not like I have a ship to get off the planet.
You just need a towel. Well, that's not what he uses in that situation, though. He uses some other, like, electronic device.
He uses his hitchhiking thumb thing.
Yeah.
That book is cool, though, The Hitchhiker's Guide. I really like that idea, and just it's fun and silly, and it was.
They're just talking about like a Kindle,
pretty much, yeah. And the way that it was like, it doesn't have enough room. I was like, I guess if the universe is infinitely large, it wouldn't have enough room for everything, even at text. Because we can fit so much on Kindles now. Like, you could probably put a terabyte in a Kindle now, and it could
easily
fit, and you could fit all the books like 1,000 times over from the world, probably,
right, yeah.
You know, like, I don't even know if that's an accurate statement. It's probably more
It wouldn't
than
surprise
that.
Me because it's just tech. I mean, all of these books that we have are kilobytes.
So I can only imagine that like a business that is the book of no having everything in it.
Right. Yeah.
It's got to have something. Well, it's probably got computing power in it too. We don't need to decompose that and make it real. I like that. It was our outlet to know space, you know, because it was because Arthur didn't know anything, of course. So
right,
but I guess that's maybe why he made Ford so considerate of what Arthur had to say, because it made us feel a little bit more relevant. Because it's like, oh, that makes like,
Arthur really does need somebody that's going to give him that time.
Well,
otherwise,
that would
he's just going to be following.
Oh yeah, and that would be our like if that's supposed to be. I think what we kind of do, you put yourself in his shoes, like, okay, what if my weird friend does save me from, like, what if I save you from the Earth, like, I'm an alien this
right,
whole time.
Yeah, you turn out to be an alien.
Would that be disappointing if I was an alien?
No, I think that'd be pretty fucking cool.
I'm not, I wish, though. Not that I know.
What I wish you were an alien, too.
I erased it from my own brain.
Yeah, you're like Beeblebrox.
I got two heads. Do you think he's just got, like, extra long, like, an extra long torso, or, like, he's even more V-shaped?
I think about the stupid creature from Phantom Menace that announces the pod race.
it's got two heads and really long necks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot about that guy. Okay, I was thinking about the...
That's what I just kept thinking about for some reason.
I went to Monty Python and the three-headed troll or whatever, like in the jungle, or in the forest where he was like, I want a shrubbery. And then...
Was there a multi-headed... Person?
Wasn't it a multi-headed
thing? I don't remember
thing?
That
well,
being...
I think
not
it
Holy
was a,
Grail.
Yeah, dude, there was a thing with multiple heads.
I don't remember.
Well, I think it was Sir Lancelot.
Because the ones that want the shrubbery are the knights who say knee.
No, they were scared of the knights who say knee, I think.
And the knights who say knee want a shrubbery. Say, bring us a shrubbery.
Yeah.
We're the knights who say knee.
Ah. Yeah, you're right.
And then wait, who, they find out.
Well, wasn't there a troll later that maybe... three multiple heads, troll.
They do
holy
come girl. Across somebody that... God, is this guy... Why can't
I... Three-headed giant Monty Python. I don't remember.
Oh, I remember that did. Now. Yeah, I can't remember. That was such a short part. Like, I don't think...
Yeah.
Like, somebody just... Yeah, one of them just... Yeah, so Robin just comes... Or one of them, the knights, comes up across that guy mm-hmm. and talks to them for like 5 seconds. They get into a stupid argument with themselves.
And then, he's just leave, like... Right? While they're arguing. Yeah.
So Monty Python was my first introduction to British humor, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it must have been mine too. Because we've thought it up. Like it was on our minds because of the British stuff, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was my first introduction. And this was like...
Because I watched the Holy first... Grail... pretty fucking early in me my too. Life.
We should watch that, dude.
Yeah, Monty Python's so good. All the movies are so good. Meaning Life is great.
I haven't seen any
Life
of the
Life of Brian
ones.
Is great.
I've never seen another one, but Holy Grail.
Just The Flying Circus in general is great, which is their like sketch show.
We did Follies, Monty Python Follies. I thought that was actually really funny. Like
I vaguely remember it. Yeah. Yeah.
It was good, man.
Oh, I thought that was the ice cream that my phone was telling us about, but it's not.
Ooh, ice cream.
That was just a hockey game. Where's our ice cream?
I don't know.
I was hoping our ice cream would be here by now.
Almost time. Well, I don't really know what else to say about the book. I'm trying to think of other cool concepts that like this book made me think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the infinite improbability drive is cool. Like, a depressed robot is funny.
Yeah.
And the fact that he killed
Martin
the mothership with, so, like,
oh my
by,
God,
by
that
like,
whole end of that chapter, I was fucking trying not to crack up at work today reading that.
Dude, sometimes when I was listening to this book, I couldn't hold it in. I'd be like, yeah. Like, that was good. And
that spaceship hated me.
I cannot imagine how much of a conversation they had too at their computer brain speeds. You know, like they must. I bet Martin could have told him his entire thesis on the universe and how he thinks it's dumb.
The excerpt that I posted on my Instagram earlier that I mentioned earlier was from that bit, and it was at the beginning whenever Ford is like checking out the spaceship but finds Martin like, you know, on the ground. And he says, "But how are you, metal man?" said Ford. "Very depressed." "What's up?" "I don't know," said Marvin. "I've never been there." He's never been up. He's always been down. It's so fucking good. It's a perfect joke.
When we first meet him, he's like, "We're at the door." And then when he goes into
he hates the door so much.
The second door he goes to, he's like, he said
you know
something
what's
like
happened
he's,
now,
he's
you?
Stalking and he's like, it said Marvin walked up to it like an animal stalking its prey. Like he was, I'm imagining him moving so slowly to sneak past the door. Right. And then it's just the entire ship though, right? That's positive, right? It's the whole thing.
It is sort of like the whole ship, but they make it seem like every individual component is also programmed to have its own personality. And the doors seem to have their own individual personality as well, except that they're programmed to be positive.
That is so good to be our future. If we ever get to like such a advanced world, it's going to be like forced positivity. Yeah. because everybody's like, dude, everybody's already saying they're depressed and stuff when I'm sure everyone had been depressed in the past, but nobody was like allowed to address it.
Yeah,
allowed
right.
To say it.
Yeah,
so in
it
the
wasn't
future when,
fun. It wasn't like allowed to be talked about.
Yeah, in the future when everyone's openly depressed, it'll be like all this positive stuff around us forcing us to try to be happy. Like, I can't wait to open the door for you. Like, ugh.
Right, yeah, shut up, door. Yeah. And the doors don't even talk. They just like make mechanical sounds in such a way that they sound like, you know, perfectly pleased with themselves that they got to open and close.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that like, was such a dumb
they're like walking down the hallway and Martin like stops and he goes, "Well, you know what's happened now, don't you?" I'm like, "What?" "I've come across one of those, you know, bloody doors."
Yeah. It's like, okay.
It's like, "Oh, yeah, we're at the end of the hallway. There's going to be a door there."
He's like, "You don't understand."
So fucking funny.
That dude... walking around through that ship is just torture for him. Like when, yeah. when Trillian was like, "You need to go pick up them from like the cabin where we picked them up or whatever," and he's like, he's just like, "Oh no, I have to deal with that door." And
right.
Like,
this is a great use of my, you know, infinitely more, you know, powerful intellect is to go retrieve these guests or whatever.
I always hope and fantasize that like. they are able to save Arthur's brain when he dies, and they can get the meaning of life and the universe and everything from him being part of the supercomputer. Because they said they could. I mean, I feel like...
They assumed that they could, at least in this book.
They thought they could.
Because he was a last generation, you know, so result of the...
But he was a lot closer to the answer. Like, if they had blown the planet up 5 minutes later. So dumb.
Yeah.
We just missed it.
It's so stupid.
God, people would have gotten murdered. Like, so, for that, in if it was real,
right,
people would have gotten murdered.
Like, do the mice
so
really
hard.
Get to say anything, though? Because they're not from this dimension.
I can't believe they died on Earth. Did they? When did they escape? Like, why did Trillian's mice just like, oh, we caught a lift with her instead of taking the mouse
because
shuttle?
She left with Beeblebrox 6 months earlier.
Oh, okay. And the other mice left way later? Like, I guess a week before?
I so guess that, some of them did.
Yeah, they didn't want to.
They don't really, I mean, at least in this part, they don't address it.
And why didn't the mice, I guess.
The mice did know it because the Trillian's two mice say that they manipulate her into going with Beeblebrox or something like that because they know that it's coming, and then they, you know, manipulate Beeblebrox into getting them to
they must have found out. They must have found out late too then, because they must have been in the same situation that Arthur was in when he found out about his house getting demolished or whatever.
Right,
he had to go
yeah.
to the basement. Like, those mice must have found out like last possible second, and they're like, we just got to get out of here. And
but they probably also couldn't contest it because they're not from the same dimension. And they're also doing an experiment that I imagine is probably against intergalactic law, which is, you know, running experiments on an entire species, making an entire species, you know,
but it's
you
the,
created them for the sake of running this experiment.
Yeah.
For your,
the whole universe was in on that, though, right? I thought everyone
it
was
seems
cool
like
with
it was just the mice and the planet builders. So, like, only the planet builders
so
know about
sketchy.
It because the mice are from a different, they're literally from a different dimension.
Hmm. So it's sketchy.
I don't think anybody else knows about it.
Someone wanted the answer. They were paying the mice for the answer. Or the question to the answer.
Something, yeah.
How many roads?
It's overly complicated
walk?
Because also that was 10 million years ago. And they when they first started trying to find out, the question was 7 million years before that.
I like that Deep Thought was just like, might I propose an answer to your philosophical problem? Like,
right, yeah.
It's like, it'll take me another 10 million years to figure out the question. So won't that provide 10 million years of like fruitful work for you guys and trying
right,
to figure out
yeah.
what I'm going to say? And they were like, oh yeah, good point. That's so funny, dude.
Right. I almost wish that I didn't know the whole 42 thing.
That would have
because
been
I felt like that joke
would
have paid off better.
Dude, it would have been. It
it's still
good.
Funny because it's, you know, it's the same level of being ludicrous, but it would have been more funny if I had, you know, been like, oh,
yeah,
42.
That's funny.
Instead of just everybody shouting 42 nonstop back in, you know, 2002.
They didn't understand the gravity of the situation.
Right. They didn't know that on the 42nd anniversary of the book's publishing, we would be doing a fucking podcast about it, and I would be experiencing it for the first time.
So inconsiderate of
fucking,
the past.
Fucking read.
How dare they make that movie? The movie's not bad. I mean, you have to. You have
I
to
wanted
kind
to
of,
see it, but I really procrastinated.
you kind of have to. It's not exactly like the book. It just
yeah.
it does a few more fun,
I just
silly
like Martin
things
Freeman.
With space. Yeah, and it's got good actors. Zooey Deschanel is trying.
Oh yeah,
and,
she's in it too. I love Zooey Deschanel.
And it's good. I mean, they're fun, you know, and I think they have like one space interaction that wasn't what I remember on mm-hmm. the book. And then, but it's cool seeing like the scope of that planet building society, you know, like
yeah.
That was cool. And
do they have the shade of blue species in the movie?
Can't remember. Probably.
I think we only see the one in the book because it's there for the reveal of the Heart of Gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. I mean, I can't remember.
That's such a stupid joke. There's a whole species of aliens. It's just a shade of blue.
Yeah.
Not even like described as like a sheet of paper that is a shade of blue. Just literally the idea of the shade of blue is what
them.
This species of alien is. It's just, it's so stupid.
It's like, and we are not going to go any deeper than that.
Right. Yeah.
That's as much as you get. Just play with the imagination.
Right. This is space.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything else.
Me neither.
I hear Sam. We basically covered. We somehow got nearly an hour out of, you know, this book about nothing.
The book was five.
Pretty good.
So we got one fifth of the book just talking about it for funsies. I would recommend it. I think even though we gave you the punchline, and if you didn't read it, I think it would be worth a read. It's still funny. It's so fun. It's got so many jokes per minute. It gets you, it does. I mean, it does get you kind of thinking in the creative, silly, sci-fi space. Yeah. You know?
Like, what if it was all just a joke?
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have to be, because it's not at all like a sci-fi book. Yeah. It's a comedy that happens to take place in space.
And it's kind of from a different, well, I mean, it literally is from a different time period, you know, from the 70s,
yeah,
into the 70s, the 80s, pretty
it
much.
It is an ambiguous time period for when it is, but we have to imagine it's in like the 70s-ish.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, they have digital watches and that's about
that
it.
That was the biggest thing yeah, too, yeah, and like they had telephones, like that
they
was
think it's
how
a pretty
everyone
neat
was connected.
Idea.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't know. That's kind of why Harry Potter's cool. It's like they don't throw cell phones right in your face. Like, I almost feel like if I was going to write a book, I'd get rid of my cell phone immediately, or like, or the character's cell phone.
Yeah, anything that's like an obvious tell.
Yeah.
You want to make the time a little bit more ambiguous, unless it plays a major part into a story or something.
Yeah. And I mean, that was what was so cool about the Night Circus, too, is it felt like it kind of fit in for. Anybody reading it now could be like, oh, this is the story of who's running it now.
It was pretty ambiguous, yeah, except for, you know, like when like the characters existed.
Oh, yeah. That
because
was
those
was
pretty obviously like, you know, like at the like turn of the century or something like that. And I wish that it hadn't said anything about the email at the end of it. That was my only kind of gripe about it, because the us character could have been at any point in time in history, you know, post circus. But then there's like emails. Okay, well, so at least, you know, it had to have been existed past like 96 or something.
You think
like
we're
going to
get rid of you think email's going anywhere, Will? I'm just kidding. But what's our favorite author? No.
Yeah, next up, we, you know, and one of the reasons that we chose, you know, serendipitously Hitchhiker's Guide is because we can knock that out in a week, because we wanted one more week of time to be able to get to previously featured author Joan Ha's new book that just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
The Ones We're Meant to Find.
And I remember
Joan
saying,
Ha, for those who don't remember, is the author of Descendant of the Crane, which is a book that we really, really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. It was super cool. I should reread it because I kind of forgot what all happened. I just remember it was like, it was a lot of just newer, like, I think it was like so Chinese themed that it
it's
was
like
it
Three Kingdoms
cool,
era Chinese, you know, setting.
A lot of cool concepts and stuff. And I remember we tweeted at her and she replied and was like, thank you. And it was just like, I was just like, I will read everything she ever writes for the rest of my
that
life.
That was the first time that we ever like tried to like reach out in any capacity to anybody.
Yeah. And actually, the book we just read,
Into the Heartless Wood
by
Joanna Ruth Meyer.
Yeah, she tweeted us back. Not good memory. Well, nice recall. So I'm going
to
probably
I am
read
trying
all
to be better
now
about Twitter. So follow us on Twitter. We'll get to that part here in a second, I guess. But yeah, so we're going to read The Ones We're Meant to Find by Joan Ha. We're just going to cut it in two.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's under 400 pages in total. So we're going to read through chapter 17.
Okay.
That takes us to just under 200 pages.
Nice.
So it should be, you know, that's about as much as we ever read.
It's available on Amazon Prime. I just ordered it today, and it's going
to
get here
tomorrow.
Yeah,
if you
want
to get a fancy hard copy like Jordan did. I bought the Kindle edition just because I'm so used to doing so. But I think I might buy a hard copy anyways just because I want to.
Yeah, I actually just bought her audiobook of
Descendant of the Crane.
Descendant of the Crane. Oh, yeah. Thank you. And then I left it a 5-star review because I was like, 4 stars? That's not true. So I'm going to give it 5.
Got to pump those numbers up.
Yeah, and I liked the book.
That book was so good.
Well, dude, we've always talked about supporting the creators that we really enjoy. Like, that's why we both watch anime through, like, the anime exclusive streaming platform, like, that supports them. I don't know if it directly supports them with how many more views they get, but it obviously helps them a lot. And then, at the very least, keeping them relevant so they can sell merch, you know? And then, And then doing this podcast, we've always tried to support new authors. And like when we find an author we like, we try to keep up with them.
And we've managed to do it a couple times with Stuart Turton, who wrote the 7.5 Deaths of Ellen Hardcastle Devil in the Dark Water.
Those books.
And then now we're reading the second of Joan Ha's. Like, it's really cool to be able to, now that we're doing this and have been doing it as long as we have been doing it and we'll hopefully continue to do it, we'll be able to continue to revisit authors in that way.
Yeah. And it's cool. I've never had authors that like weren't just like, have you heard of Stephen King? It was
It's like, duh, I've heard of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Everyone's heard of Stephen King.
And those books are good. We all know. Right. And, but yeah, so.
Talks about baseball all the time. Whenever we were talking about dating your story, I was going to bring up Stephen King. I was like, because he always talks about like fucking baseball players.
Yeah.
During whenever the time period it was that he was trying to do it. And I was like, that's dating it as just as much as if you just outright said this book takes place in 1973.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of his storytelling is the setting.
I kind of enjoyed that too. Because it was like a window into the past that like things that I'm sure, like if we read a book,
he does
from
like
the
his
90s,
setting to be as important to the story as anything. You know?
Like on this podcast, I really liked the other day, they referenced Pogs and I was like, I love it when people remember Pogs. They were only hot for like 6 months.
I know. Right.
But they were hot,
one of the
dude.
Dumbest things that ever existed.
Yeah. They were like trying to reinvent marbles, I think. Right. Isn't that like the theory?
That's effectively what it was, like a cross between marbles and jacks.
Cool.
Yeah, let's take these two like toys that are about as old as Stick and Hoop and mash them together to some stupid like Gen Y garbage.
Yeah.
With skulls and, you know, razor blade designs on them, because
some of them
were extreme.
They were pretty hardcore.
What the fucking?
Some of them.
It was like in that time period where, like, you know, like the X Games were a thing and everything was extreme.
Dude, that is
and brands were like putting Z's at the end of their names and stuff. Like, the 90s fucking were stupid.
Yeah, but whatever. You guys know how to find us at anchor.fm/ears-stamps.
Yep, you can find links to all our socials there, but specifically, you can find us at ears stamps at Twitter. It's been a long time since we've outright just said it.
Oh, yeah. Dog ears and timestamps at gmail.com. ears_stamps and...
at ears_stamps on Twitter.
ears_stamps on Twitter.
I think both on Twitter and Instagram is where you can find us there. Follow us there. I'm going to try and be way better about... Maybe not Instagram, because that requires you to take a picture, which requires me to have thought and actually compose something, because I'm not going to take half-assed pictures.
Yeah, @ears_stamps on Instagram and Twitter. That's what I used to say.
But I am going to try and be better about Twitter. So I'm going to, at the very least, you know, be posting whenever episodes go live and any relevant updates to whatever's happening.
Yeah, let us know what you think. If we missed anything on the Hitchhiker's Guide, tell your friends if you think this is something they'd like.
Yeah,
leave
tell
us
all
a
your
review.
Friends.
Rate, review.
Insert Taking Back Sunday joke for the 15th time. Tell
subscribe.
All your friends. Subscribe. Tell your friends. That is still at this point the most important thing you can do far as, you know, helping the show is tell your friends.
Yeah. Tell your friends, and leaving a review would be a big help. Yeah. Just help us get the word out.
If you're
out.
One of the new listeners that found us from the ad campaign we ran on Podcast Addict for last month, April, welcome.
Yeah.
We hope that you're enjoying it so far if you stayed for more than one episode. And we hope that you will tell your friends, as we keep saying, tell your friends. like Jordan said, let us know whatever it is that you're thinking. I'm going to try and be more active on Twitter. So follow us there. We've got like 4 followers right now. Let's get those numbers up. And sometimes maybe I'll make a dumb, quippy, sort of melancholic joke on Twitter, because that's what I used to do with my personal Twitter all the time. We'll see what happens.
And one more time, what was the book that we're reading?
The Ones We're Meant to Find.
By Joan Ha.
Through chapter 17. There's like 50-something chapters, so chapter-wise it's not broken down in half, but page-wise it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Through chapter 17. We'll see you all next week with that. I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps.